go. Okay, so my name is Dan Plastina. Today we'll be reviewing information protection. We've made a whole lot of new advances. But just before we get started, I wanted to get a sense for how many people know about information protection, RMS. Show of hands. Yeah? Okay, good. How many people have seen the Channel 9 video on updated information protection work? Okay, a few folks. So what I'll do today is walk you through a lot of the investments that we're doing in the space, and then Tejas Patel, who's right here up front, will be presenting a second session towards the end of the day at 5 o'clock, and his session will actually walk through pretty much every step required to do this. Some of the UI or experiences that Tejas will be showing later on in the day will be pre-release, so they're not out yet, but they'll be in beta in July, and then product will be released in the September timeframe. So with that, let me just jump in here. In terms of industry trends in this space, none of this should be new to most of you in the room. Consumerization of IT, big effort that's happening to everyone. Sometimes for cost reduction reasons, other times because people just want to bring their cool gadgets. Externalization of IT, generally driven out of cost considerations, where applications are being moved into the cloud for access. Data, there's a lot more of it and it's stored in more places. Couple that with social and you couple that with consumerization and your data's flowing all over the place. And so the net is really the traditional perimeter is rapidly eroding. You know, this has been in the talk for, what, maybe 5, 7, 10 years now where the perimeter is going. But at this point, the perimeter is eroding at a very rapid rate with all of us carrying gadgets that have a lot of data on it. So we see the need for continuous protection at the data level, basically protect the thing you care about so that when it roams around, you have basically a security bubble around that entity. In terms of market realities, you know, Microsoft has been doing well in the information protection space, you know, statistically or percentage-wise, but the reality is most of the offers in this space have been lacking a lot of key capabilities. We've just really had some gaps in the space, either the device support, file type support, ease of deployment, just the solution itself. What I hope to show you today is something that I think will really change that in terms of advances. Two, users really do collaborate. At Microsoft, for example, we have 7 companies with which we trust. We do trusted RMS sharing with. And my guess is it's either 700 or 7,000 sharings occur every day with other businesses that ought to have been protected. And so that's just an example of us knowing that people do collaborate and data is being shared, but we're not sharing appropriately across organizations. And then finally, COIT, consumerization of IT, or BYOD, bring your own device, is raising that risk because more and more people are putting data on devices, sometimes for use as they work outside the office. Other times, they'll use a SkyDrive, a Dropbox, a Box.net to basically get data to their home machine or just be convenient. Mesh was a very popular application, SkyDrive replacing it. But a lot of us will just use that as the new USB stick or new sneaker net as a way of getting data around. I have a couple of laws of information protection, so to speak. And these, I think, are the tenets that we've used to define our system. So the first one really is that data exists to be consumed. The presumption here is you create data. It's ought to be used for something. It's either a report or a data store. And it will flow increasingly from different stores into devices and into different organizations. It'll go into the cloud. It'll be on-prem. It'll go through the cloud to someone else's prem. And basically, we have to let that data flow. So that's one of my laws, is that if you create data, it really needs to be free-flowing in order to be of utility to that organization. The second one is the concept of clarifying what encryption is and what protection is. I term protection as being encryption with policy. So this is the ability for me to protect data, have a policy surrounding that data. I would like for Tejas to be able to use it, but Tejas really shouldn't forward it to others or print it. and enforcement of that policy. So to me, that's what I defined as protection. So as I go through the deck today, whenever I say protection, it's more than just PGP or SMIME or you know, WinZip with a password. It's really having that policy surrounding the data and the enforcement thereof. The third part is this realization that in modern times, data is consumed by more than just people. So this is a scenario where I have an email, I protect it, I send it to Anne, and gets my email. In that general flow, there was a whole lot more than just Anne and I who had the ability to see the email. Anti-spam, malware, data leakage prevention tools running in the servers have the right, and in fact, with regulation now, have the need to be able to see that data as well. So when you think about a protection technology, something like SMIME is great for point-to-point, but it defeats everything in the middle and thus often violates a lot of corporate environment requirements, such as regulatory reporting and the ability to do malware and anti-spam detection within a company. So what we'll show today, in fact, will enable the ability for others to reason over this subdata. And finally, the protection is really afforded in two tiers, and I think these are very important tiers. One of them is that before someone is provided a password, that protection should be very, very strong. And the reason being is because you may be in an adverse, hostile environment. You might put something on SkyDrive Dropbox. You might have something that you email to someone through a public mail system. Regardless, it's in transport, and you want to make sure that prior to being authorized, prior to a user entering a password, that content is very well secured. Once the user has provided their credentials, you're now dealing with a person who you trusted. You wanted to give them this data, and there you seek to be most invisible, most transparent as possible. You want someone to be able to consume the data with ease and pretty much live without boundaries. Music DRM, for example, there are examples where DRM was applied to music where it got in the way. You couldn't put it on all the devices. You couldn't play it where you wanted to. And there are examples of DRM for music that are less obtrusive. You know, Fairplay, for example, is an example of a good DRM. Xbox, the way they do DRM now, has gotten a whole lot better and is another example of more transparent protection. So we'd like to get to a point where once a user's been authorized, you can basically have this really good transparent experience, so it's not in the way. Any questions on that? Just check. Good. Okay. In terms of approaches to protecting information, there are a lot of different approaches. One is TDE, or transparent drive encryption. This is often known as BitLocker in Windows world, but there are different forms of this. Doing transparent drive encryption is good, but it's a little bit like the key on the lock of the key on the door of your house. Once the door is open, anyone can come in. People who are in the house can do whatever they want. They're in. And so BitLocker, once you unlock a laptop, everything running on the laptop has access to the data. So it's pretty easy, for example, to misconfigure SkyDrive to synchronize all your My Documents to the cloud. And that constitutes data leakage in the IT person's eyes. But it's technically configured properly. In other words, BitLocker is doing what it's supposed to do. It's giving file access to agents asking for the access to that file. So BitLocker is really all about doing a full lockbox around content, and that doesn't work when the policy on the content is different. I have secure documents, I have other documents, I have a personal shopping list to go to REI, and it's all in the same My Docs folder, and that's just one example of a solution. Now, I want to be clear that what I'm saying here is not BitLocker's bad, BitLocker's fantastic, but it's fantastic for the closed lid, open lid securing of a laptop in a workplace. The second one is data centralization. Some people basically put all of the data in one place. There are lots of examples of this. SharePoint is a great one. You know, there are companies like Watchdocs that do other forms of secure collaboration as centralization. It's a great start, but it's a big change in the way that people use data, and it's a big change in the way that you're basically enforcing or asking for restrictions of rights. So for example, if I want data on my phone, data on my phone is not in one of those central repositories anymore. And so you basically break one of my first laws, which was data needs to flow. So this will help you, but it doesn't always solve all problems. In fact, my guess is it solves maybe a third of the common cases for secure collaboration or secure document usage. And the final one here is an approach that's gaining some popularity initially. And I'll call it popularity initially because it's people are looking at it and then getting a little concerned about the actual implementation. And these are called content encryption gateways, or CEGs. A content encryption gateway is effectively a network device that you would deploy in your perimeter. And anything that goes through that CEG is basically protected on its way to the cloud. So what's in the cloud is fully encrypted. But then it means that others can't reason over data. Mobile devices need to do the unnatural act of coming in through a VPN, going through the CEG to then go out to the cloud. So there are a lot of issues in terms of the way this particular one works. But the initial promise sounds very promising. So just be careful about these three and factor them into your overall data protection approach. What I'd like to do now is sort of change gears. The first few slides were really just a little bit of setup on what is information protection, my views on the biases that I have in terms of laws of identity, if you wish. Now what I'd like to do is jump into what we're promising. This is a whole lot different than the RMS that's in market today, and I think it's actually pretty much a game changer in terms of how we approach protecting information in the future. So in terms of promises, the first one is a promise you can protect any file type. So RMS used to protect doc files or office files, and now you can protect pretty much any file type, and I'll show you that later on. I'll promise as well that you can consume protected files on all important devices. And all important devices is more than the Surface you waited in line for earlier in the week and your PC. It's all important devices. And I'll touch on each one of these at great length. You can share with anyone. Anyone is more than peers in your company. RMS today works well if you're sharing within your company. If you try to share outside your company, it's a very difficult endeavor. We'll make that easy to share with anyone, which is sharing with another business or sharing with an individual that may use a Live ID or a Gmail ID. If those users or that anyone that you're sharing with doesn't have information protection, there is still a way to validate who they are for free. So there's no fee involved in them participating in your desire to share your information securely. And that's also an important change in the system. You can keep your data on premise if the cloud scares you. And I'll walk through that. I believe there are three different patterns that we're seeing with customers in the space. And I'll walk through the case where you want to protect your data using a cloud paradigm so that you can share with others, but still keep the data in a place that gives you comfort. And so I'll touch on that. I promise that you can control your tenant key. This is the root key that protects all your content. It's an important key that you use so that you can see inside the data that's protected as it flows through your systems, your mail system in particular. It's a common place. I want you to be aware of what's going on with your protected data. And basically have the ability to do usage tracking, have access to spikes in usage. For example, someone may send out a document, and that document's quiet as it should be, and all of a sudden a lot of sharing went out, and then you realize that maybe the rights or the permissions on that document weren't set correctly, and a security group was added inadvertently. And then finally, there's always a question about complete solutions. Microsoft provides, I think, a very good start in this new world, but there are a lot of partners that we're working with in this space that really help fulfill the broader need of a complete solution. Each sector is somewhat different, whether you're financial, medical, automotive, you name it. There's basically something different for everyone, and so we're working with a lot of partners. I recently had a call with 200 ISVs in this space to talk through what we're doing and to get them excited about working with us on basically building out these offers. So, well, any questions on these? Any areas you'd like for me to dive in a little deeper on? More than happy to dive in. Otherwise, I'll start walking through some of the changes we've made. Okay? So the first thing is all important devices means we will have a developer toolkit, an SDK, software developer kit, pretty much everywhere that is important. And the everywhere is defined right here as Windows Classic, iOS, Android, WinRT, Windows Phone, the Macintosh platform, and for all of the others right now, we have a RESTful interface, which means it's a web service that people can write software for. So if someone's interested in BlackBerry, it's possible to write an SD, write software on a BlackBerry device that will use a RESTful web service interface. Or you can do, you can write code on Linux, or you can put stuff in photocopiers and, I guess photocopiers and scanners is probably a sector where there's interest. Some of the device vendors in this space, they said, you know, if I take a piece of paper, can I just photocopy something like a medical record, you know, basically put it on the glass and outside of, in the photocopier, it's a PDF that's created that's RMS protected right in the copier. So that way, if you're in the Medicare business, you can say, look, these the patient data that I just scanned in, I know is protected and wasn't available to anybody outside inadvertently. So you have a better assurance for regulatory concerns. These SDKs will enable enlightened applications to basically build rights-protected content. Office and Foxit are two well-known. We're building a viewer that I'll describe more in the coming slides that will exist on all of these platforms. But they're basically built on these SDKs. And I'll walk through the three types of SDKs or the approach that you can take if you want to write your own in-house apps or if you want to write more elaborate applications for others. These SDKs work with the Azure ADRMS, Azure Active Directory Rights Management Server. One of the things that I'll be asking today is that all of you who use RMS on-premise, that you actually use RMS in the cloud. And I'll walk through why I'm asking that. Primarily, it has to do with the ability to share. And hopefully, come the end of the presentation, you'll see that there's tremendous value in making that step. If not, I'd invite you to come and talk with me and give me the feedback as to why, because we're basically writing the code and fixing things right now. So we'd love to get your feedback. The all-important files aspect is really the ability to protect any file type. So obviously today, Office is instrumented with rights management services, so we can protect all the Office docs. We could protect Word, Excel, PowerPoint. The rest of Office is looking to add support. Visio, for example, is something that people have requested a lot. Project is another. So we're catching up, if you wish, with the rest of the broader Office suite. But more importantly is you can basically protect any file type. For some files, that we think are very common, my general distribution of files would be half of the files are Office files in the canonical or typical workplace. The next 20% or so are PDF. The next 20% or so are text and image variants. And the final 10% are other. Does that sound about right? Yeah, got a couple nods there. If you're in the manufacturing sector, obviously CAD takes over a whole lot more. But generally speaking, you could take a half-empty look of the world, which is what? You only cover half the docs, the Office docs? Or you could take a half-full view of the world, which is, hey, you're halfway there. But getting the other half is really important. And so what we've done for text and images is we said, we're going to create variants of these that are protected files. Because the extension is used by so many different folks, so many different applications and processes, we've taken a text and we've created ptext. So if you right-click protect a text file, it effectively becomes a protected text file. And the same for XML, it'll become a pxml. And we'll offer rendering of that content in its protected environment. And likewise for JPEG, PNG, JPEG with the E, TIFF, BMP, and GIF, all of those have a protected variant. So you can basically get a protected set of images and content that way. Anything else, or if you'd like, you can configure the system to have more of the file formats, the above, text, JPEG, PNG, etc. You can have them all used in the generic pfile model. The name.pxx, so name.ptext, if I had a file that I protected, it's truly protected and cannot be viewed outside of an app that supports ptext. Just like Word won't let you do certain things with an RMS-protected Word file, our viewer, when you open up a ptext file, won't let you do the same thing. So if you're told you can't print and you can't forward to other people, or you can't edit, our editor, our viewer will basically enforce those rights. Pfile, on the other hand, you could think of it as WinZip protection. So we basically wrap the file. It's a protected entity. And at the time you want to open it, once the user's provided their password, we basically decrypt the file, and we give it to the native registered application. So if it was a protected AutoCAD file, you would basically get a engine.dwg, which is the AutoCAD file extension, .pfile. And that file you should feel free to put on BitTorrent. Just roam it around, do whatever you want with it. It's a secure file until someone provides their credentials. Once they provide their credentials, there's a screen that I'll show you in a moment that educates the user about opening said file. And once they're educated and they're told what the risks are, then basically they get to open the file. And at that point, yes, they could print, and yes, they could forward, but they've been educated on the risk. Now, we'll obviously, with the SDKs that we have on six platforms, we'll start working with all of the different ISVs to build RMS into their native applications, but you don't have to live without 100% file coverage. You can actually protect any important file you have right now by using pfile right out of the chute. Yeah, and then the configuration here, as that I mentioned earlier, is you have the ability in the system to basically say, I as the IT pro, say, I want text to be text.pfile so that people can use any editor that they want. So if it's, for example, a development shop, and you're sharing source code with another company, you may choose to protect your CPP files and then just mail those around. And you know that when they were on Dropbox, et cetera, no one could see them. But when the person gets them at the other end, they can take them out of the wrapper, integrate them into their build environments, and then just do normal work. But you had a secure transport mechanism. And the last bullet here, we're offering a viewer on all six platforms that will basically launch all of these pfiles. So if it was a ptext or pimage format, we will render the content. So someone will be able to get a read-only view of any text file or any image file. We also do the launching. So if someone was using an Android phone and got a text.pfile or not a dwg.pfile on that device, they will be prompted by our application, because we registered for pfile, to prove who they are. And once they've proven who they are on the phone, we will launch the right application to see the content. This may seem a little less secure, but just take a common everyday, not everyday, once a year occurrence, tax time, where if you have someone doing your taxes for you, you mail them your W-2, you mail them all kinds of interesting, important stuff, and you probably mail it to a Gmail or a Hotmail address. And that person now has your tax information in their mailbox for the next 7-10 years, because no one deletes any mailbox information. The chances of them getting hacked in the next 7 years is non-zero. It's pretty high. You always get spam mail from someone in your circle of friends that has been owned either on Facebook or any of their public mail. And so the idea with RMS is you could basically grab one of these and just right-click the PDF that is your W-2, and the tax person, when they get the document, doesn't have strong enforcement. They'll be able to print it and do whatever they want with it, but you trusted them. However, when you sent them the document, you can say it expires in 1 month, and a month from now, they can no longer open that content. And furthermore, if someone does get into their Gmail account, which means they know their password, when they go to open the file, that thing will have expired. And so you have the ability to protect data, and so that expiration aspect is really big and does not exist today. Okay, so I'm going to go through a couple of these. I did all of the demos, so to speak, as screenshots, the reason being that I'd have a lot of devices up here and have to deal with Wi-Fi and 3G, and almost everybody in the room has a 3G device, so I didn't want to deal with contending with the network against you all. So what we'll first show here is the right-click capability. So at the top, I have a series of files. I have a batch file, I have an image, a PDF, PowerPoint, text file, a Visio, and a Word doc. And I set them up in a way that you can pretty much see inside all of them. Batch doesn't have a preview, but you see the image, you see the this is a sample PDF, you see sample for a PowerPoint. Text doesn't have a preview, but it says this is a sample. Visio, you see a little flowchart, and finally Word is the same thing. The right-click verb, this is from an interim build within our environment, so it's going to look a whole lot prettier than this, but this is what it looks like when I did it on my desktop my laptop. I basically say protection, and then I get to pick a Microsoft policy, being that I'm a Microsoft employee. In this particular case, I say Microsoft read only, and at that point, all of the files at the bottom become protected. And there's two that don't have an icon. That's just a glitch on my machine. But basically, the idea is that you have an overlay everywhere. And if you squint carefully at the PDF one, it says this PDF is protected. And so PDF actually has the ability for us to create two streams, one stream which is not protected that says the stream you're really interested in was protected. So that way, if someone opened it up in, say, Adobe, Adobe's not able to render that file format yet, but a Foxit PDF reader can. And so basically this is an example of generic protection of any file type. Again, don't worry too much about the big blue icon. You know, things will change, but this is an example of generic protection. Any questions on this? The Word doc, okay, so that's a good question. So the question is, why does the Word doc file extension not change? One of the nice things about the SDK, I'll talk about three parts of the SDK in a future slide, but we have this thing called the File API. And the File API you can all use from PowerShell to bulk protect anything you want. So if you have a file share, you can use FCI, or if you have scripts or websites, you basically use the File API. And you could say protect or unprotect. Very, very simple API. What it does is it will protect to the best of its ability. A Word document, when it's protected, doesn't need to change its file name because Word is an enlightened application in that it knows about protected and unprotected files natively. So it keeps the same file extension. Visio, in the version that I'm using, is not enlightened. And so Visio.vsd had to become Visio.vsd.pfile because the viewer that my team is writing can't render a Visio. It's an advanced format. So we basically create a generically protected P file. And when you open that Visio P file, it launches Visio. It educates you first. Hey, Dan is sharing the file with you. Read-only is the intent. Visio is not able to enforce this. Please accept the use, open, or cancel. And if the user says open, the operation is audited. You know that Fred opened the file, and you're off to the races. Text became ptext, PowerPoint became the same. No need to change because PowerPoint is a natively protected file format like Word. PDF is also a natively understood RMS format. We are working with the ISO committee on creating ISO standard RMS protected PDFs. And I'll demonstrate that in a moment with the Foxit browser. Image did become PJPEG. So when you open that image, we will actually enforce the rights. And finally, the bat file became a P file. For those of you who are thinking ahead here, the bat file, when you double-click on it, we don't just run the bat file. We throw it in a folder, and we open the folder so that we don't end up having a malware vector. Yes? So the RMS server in general will, and I actually have a slide on this a little bit later, but at a high level, when RMS fires up in the organization, it says, hey, Active Directory, do you have policies for me? And the IT pro staff will have created policies for that company. The policies are global to the entire company right now in RMS. It's a common feature to do per department or per user policy, and I'll talk about that. But generally speaking, AD was the enumeration of these policies. And if you picked user-defined protection, that's an ad hoc protection where you get to slide sliders around, pick expiration dates in a far simpler new UI that I don't have today to show, but I know it's much, much better than what we currently have in Word. Actually, if you're a non-prem AD-RMS user, generic protection works with AD on-prem. What doesn't work with AD on-prem is the device support. So the device SDKs basically require a different type of authentication, and the collaboration scenarios require different type of authentication. And so I'll walk you through that later. We've made those rely on the cloud. But generic protection will work on-prem. So that's one part of the answer. The other part of the answer is, generally speaking, our SDKs have the ability to do key caching. And so once you acquire a license for content, that license has a time to live. And so you can have offline access for a period of time as well. Okay, good question. So now what I'm going to do is walk you through protected PDF. I'm going to showcase a couple of partners that we're working with today, Foxit. Is clearly a well-known company in the PDF space. They build a very powerful, quick in the fast sense, very performant PDF viewer. They have built RMS into their product, and I thought that a nice way of showing it would be to show the mobile device support. So they're actually using our mobile device SDKs. They've got the Windows Phone 1 in the work. It's not their fault, it's our fault. We actually, given that Windows Phone is ours, We basically got the other two working first so that we can make the broader point that though we're Microsoft, we do care about all devices that everybody uses within your company. It's really a mixed device world nowadays, and of course we're going to do Windows Phone, but we care about iOS and Android functioning well as well. So what I'm showing here is the experience of having a PDF. You can kind of see on the first iOS one, this PDF file is protected. You'll need an updated version of your PDF viewer to see it. But basically, then if you say Open With on an iPhone, you'll have Open With Foxit. In the middle picture, we have someone's storage, and you see there demo.pdf.pdf. And when you open said file, you basically get the Foxit application launch, and then you get a prompt for creds. So this is a scenario where the file is protected. You need to prove who you are. In this case, Alice is logging in. Pardon the ugly name, obviously. If you all are using this, you would have a customized tenant as opposed to the test tenant naming with .onmicrosoft.com. And then you get to see the protected document. And if you've used RMS before, the yellow bar is familiar to you. It basically indicates that protection exists and is being enforced. So that's pretty simple. It's what you'd expect. But this was a true running live capture of PDF. Foxit will be making these available. There's an URL coming up where you can basically go to their site. If you were to click on the yellow bar, so there's a little eye on the yellow bar, or really click anywhere on the yellow bar, you're able to see the permissions afforded to you. In this case, the permissions shown are the permissions of the author. So Alice created this, so Alice has full control to the content, but she's reminded with the yellow bar that it is protected. If I show you something similar, except we do the protected text or image variant, these three now are emails showing that Bob sent was the recipient of an email that was protected. There's an attachment in all three of these, but you basically can see that that same attachment is a PJPEG in all three mail clients. The same prompt. This is all running code, but the same prompt occurs, and someone's required to log in. And in this particular case, we have the image. And if you look carefully, there's also a watermark in the image. We'll probably do the watermark only on devices that prohibit screen capture blocking. So iOS, for example, if you press the center button and the top button at the same time, it will capture your screen, and there's no programmatic way of blocking that. If you care about that, complain to Apple. I can't do anything about it. But in the meantime, we put a watermark here, so if someone did do a screen capture, you'd basically know Bob at isvtenant.com was the one who leaked this particular picture. If it was a large-scale picture, say high-resolution picture, the screen capture on an iOS device couldn't be any more than the screen size of said device. They wouldn't actually get to see the full image in its unprotected form. But that's the benefit of having an enforcement point for the clients. And here again, if you were to look at the policies by clicking on the yellow bar, you can see that Bob was granted access to this file by Alice, and Bob only has view rights, no extract or copyrights, which would be required to unprotect that file. Any questions on this? Seem good? Useful? Yeah? Question in the back? Correct. I fully agree with that position. If you're trying to prevent something from ever being seen, a common case I'll use is, you know, in the automotive industry, one of the most important things is the color of next year's car, because they come up with cool new colors, and so that color is an important aspect. Yeah, a color with a watermark is a visible color, or likewise the grill of a new car. However, if you want to prevent your content that has leaked in that way from showing up in other publications, most self-respecting journalists, even the less self-respecting journalists, will not republish something that clearly has a watermark on it. And so there's a barrier there, if you wish. But yeah, someone can retype the content too, or use one of many other means. Okay. We've looked at invisible watermarking as well, and some of the feedback I've gotten from customers that we've interacted with on this was, I'd rather have visible because it teaches as opposed to catches, and I'm more interested in teaching and preventing the leak in the first place. So oftentimes this watermark will have that teaching effect and people won't leak it. Okay? So on the user classification side of things, we're working with Titus. Titus is a leader in classification. They do a lot of military work today. And classification really is about making policy decisions easier for users. So if you ask someone, should this be a read-only template? Should this be a rewrite template? Should this be that template? Sometimes it's a little hard. If you ask the user to tell you what something is, then that's a whole lot easier. Oh, you know, this was healthcare patient information, and it related to blood tests. And then the company can decide what that applied policy should be. And so generally that's the term in the industry is used as classification. Classification makes it easier for some, not everyone, but you know, some folks like the use of classification. And there's two models. One model is to ask the user, and one model is to actually do it automatically as part of you doing regular expression or grep type analysis on your files. And so Microsoft has a product called DAC, or it used to be called FCI, the File Classification Infrastructure. Dynamic Access Control is a new name. But effectively, that server will just splunk around your file shares looking for content by reading it. And when it finds a file that ought to be protected, so for example, Microsoft, if there's a file anywhere in corporate network that has more than 5 credit card numbers, it's protected in place. Because it's deemed PII information that we're supposed to protect. And so that's automatic classification, and I'll touch on that in a second. but basically our ability to show data protection offering to the user is one thing, where a user picks a policy. The other important part of it is having them have the ability to do classification. And so the screen will make this a whole lot more evident than the text here. And finally, the SDK will integrate classification. The difficulty that most of these companies have had in the classification space is their user interface needs to permeate every application for which they intend to protect content, and it's been pretty hard for them. And so as a result, it's not uniform. They add button bars to Windows, but there's Protect that we provide, and there's this other operation. And so it's just a difficult uphill battle. The expression I use is whack-a-mole. Basically, you knock one out, another one pops up, and you just kind of keep on, you know, whacking moles in terms of solving problems. So by us supporting classification in our SDK, as we work with vendors, and which includes obviously Ovis and PDF, but as we work with vendors, we have the ability to expose your classification desires to those products. So here's a simple example. Earlier on, when I clicked on Protect, what I saw was a list of policies in the flyout. In this particular case, what we did is we said, hey, you click Protect, the company has asked that you classify the image. And I just took a picture of my whiteboard, and I just wanted a secure capture of that whiteboard picture to send to others at work. And in this particular case, it said, hey, it's confidential and it's research and development only. What happens under the covers is that this Fabricam, R&D, read-write, print, copy policy template was applied. The user didn't really have to know that a whiteboard picture or a JPEG that was considered confidential for R&D meant this template. And so that mapping is pretty powerful. And then folks like Titus spend a lot of time working with different companies to create classification taxonomies. And so the way this works, and this is the question we had earlier, which is RMS server will generally speak to an RMS Enlightened app or a client, in our case, the Information Protection Viewer. And it will show, it will tell it, hey, here are my templates. Instead of us going to the RMS server, we have the ability to go to a parallel server and say, hey, is there a classification server in this company? Because I'd like to know if there's classification taxonomy that we should show to the user when trying to protect content. And so that classification server can do two things. One is it has the ability to say, here's the taxonomy, and I show you a little picture here where the caption of public meant Microsoft All Rights, and so this is the JSON data that they can give us. But they also have the ability to go to the templates directly from the server and maybe say, hey, Dan shouldn't get all the templates. Dan should only have access to a subset of the templates because Dan is in a certain division and he's not in another division. Microsoft right now, you know, with the announcement of Xbox One, finally the codename Durango is more known, but back in the day, Durango was a pretty secret word at Microsoft, and very, very few people should know what it meant. If I have a template that drops down and the little flyout says Durango, it's like, well, what's Durango? And then everybody starts talking about it, and before you know it, we're leaking like a sieve. And so a model of having this indirection means that the classification server can say, is Dan part of a division that permits me to show the Durango template or not, and basically filter things out. So military or other areas, you know, the tech industry where there are a lot of secret projects or tented teams, this becomes an interesting offer as well. I know we are going to deploy this at Microsoft for sure. There's a whole other effort in terms of automated classification. If you haven't seen or heard of this, there's a new thing called work folders. You can think of it as SkyDrive Pro Plus in some ways. But it's basically the ability to create a folder at work for your users, and people would use those folders, and in the act of using them, RMS can happen in the background and basically just start protecting files placed in those folders. I was recently in Asia, and a large telco vendor there says that they send people to malls with laptops trying to get people to buy their cell phones. And when they do, they basically have them enter customer information on the laptop, which is in the mall, And that's high-value PII data, and in that particular part of Asia-Pacific, protecting that data is a requirement by law. And so what they were doing is they had the laptop use redirected folders to a server that was in the company headquarter. The laptops were all connected with 3G, being a telco carrier that was free. But they basically had a network carrier connection. And so every time a file was written to disk, that file would go up to the server. The server would look at it and go, whoa, whoa, there's PII information in here. RMS protect it. And the RMS protected file came back down to the laptop, and it was now safe. And so basically that laptop, all of the PII data was protected. BitLocker is not sufficient in their case to actually protect the content, the PII content by law, because that file could be forwarded to other people and via email and whatnot. So anyway, so these are the other sessions. The first two are on work folders at different levels, and then the final one is about the FCI or dynamic access control offer that will be discussed on Wednesday for those of you who can wake up at 8:30 after spending the night in New Orleans. And then here, if you would like to try this yourself, you can download the IP viewer at that URL. I welcome you to play with it. If you have RMS, go ahead and set that up. If you don't, in Tejas's talk this afternoon or at 5, he'll walk you through what it means to set up an online tenant and play with it. So you can definitely get to experience a lot that this new general protection offer has to bring. If you're a developer, the same site will give you access to all the developer SDKs. And if you go to the Foxit software products, RMS, TechEd, URL, you'll be able to get more information about the Foxit reader that supports RMS. Changing gears, if you're trying to protect data internally within your company, really there are a couple of important aspects. And so this is B within B. So I'm sharing with colleagues within my work, you're sharing with colleagues within your workplace. Really, the reality is organizations of all sizes have data that they need to protect. The data sometimes is said to be 3%-ish, but it could be a whole lot more depending on the group that you're in. Data, as I said earlier, needs to flow, and as a result, is really increasingly rarely in a state of permanent rest. And so the concept that you're protecting your server, I think, is fundamentally flawed. In this current era, not the future, but now, more and more this data is flowing to places, and you ought to protect it. And we've touched on that. And then finally, we touched on this notion of RMS is being used by users, but also additional software, malware logging, FCI, various other products that do DLP. And they need to be able to look at these. Your lawyers will also say that if there is a legal case in your company, that they have to be able to go collect all of the files and pull them into a central place and remove any protection so that they can give to the person suing you. However unjust that sounds, it still is a requirement of the law. And if something was done in a PGP S/MIME type encryption format, it's really, really painful and expensive to do that discovery. With RMS, your IT pro central organization will be able to go do a search against that content. So just things to think about. The reason for this slide is really to express, you know, how it is that we protect data in motion and enable others to do things. But I wanted to show you a particular offer, which is not only do we do applications and email, but we have some vertical efforts underway. And so this first one is Secude is a company. They're currently located in Switzerland, but they've been around for a while. They've done SSO for SAP, but they're generally an SAP integrator. And they've done some really interesting work that lets you, if you use SAP, anytime a report is extracted, that report is protected, because SAP is one of those honeypots of very important information within a company. And generally speaking, reports that come out of there are really ought to be protected. And so they make use of the SDK. As I touched on earlier on, we have three of them. We have a core API, which is the powerful API. In the old days, the core API required about 4,000 lines of highly talented, security-aware code writing. Now it's far, far simpler, 300 to 400 lines of code. You don't have to be a PKI expert, et cetera. But it still is a very powerful interface, and Office and others make use of this particular API when they try to write enlightened applications. The file API is the simple API, and that's one that I would say many different companies will use. It's simple in that you just say get templates. It gives you a list of the templates, and then you can say protect this file with that template. And you can do that in PowerShell. So if you're trying to do protection as part of a website that you're building, if you have internal HR pages and someone's trying to download salary data, you could literally protect the Excel file on egress from your website just by calling two lines of code. It's also very intelligent, though simple, because it will protect to the best of its ability. So if you give it a CSV file, you'll get csv.p file. If you give it a text file, you'll get ptext. So you can basically rely on it to do the most intelligent thing it can with the data as it protects it. And finally, there's the RESTful web service for people who just want to talk straight to the service itself. Now, here's what Secure has done. So this is an SAP classic architecture. They use the NetWeaver platform. And generally speaking, going through the dark gray box here, you have NetWeaver straight down the pipeline through the download export, and then front-end clients have access to content. And then that information will go to mail, will go to cloud drives, will go to thumb drives, will go to folders on your hard disk, wherever. That data is basically just flowing to the places where it, frankly, it ought to flow. I mean, that's the purpose of generating reports, and that's the reason why you buy SAP as a product. What Secure does is they basically insert a little bit of a DLP product offer into the NetWeaver pipeline, and as data is going to be exported, they are aware of what's happening, and they're able to say, hey, this information is actually pretty sensitive information, and I know what writes Dan has access to, and so I'm going to give Dan read-write access to this content or read-only access to this content. I'm going to give access to only Dan. I'll give access to this group of users, a larger group, you know, say Microsoft Confidential or whoever. But SAP Secure has the ability, given the data that SAP provides, to make these claims. They then call our SDK, and they do the data protection with the SDK, and that protection occurred. When they called the SDK, the green box was invoked, so basically a conversation with either the AD on-prem server or the Azure AD server for a key exchange. Now, what's really important is the red line, the little brace that I put in there. Your SAP data never went to the cloud. So the way RMS works at a fundamental level is if you're trying to protect a piece of content, you basically put protection over it with a symmetric key. The symmetric key is then placed in the document, in this little wrapper, if you wish, so that it's always available with that item. If you protected two documents, they have different symmetric keys. So you basically have very robust AES encryption on the content. But what we've done is when we put the symmetric key in the document, there's a policy license, a PL. And that PL is locked with your company or your organization's key, your root key, the big key. And the little dance that occurs between the green box and our little blue box inside the Secure service is basically, hey, I'm Dan. I have this PL, and I would like for you to unlock it so I can unlock my content. And we send the PL up to the server with my proof of identity, who I am, with the fact that I have a token or a password, basically. And what comes down is an unlocked version of that key so that I can unlock the file. But the reason why I go through all of this detail, if you wish, is never did your corporate information leave to the cloud, even though the cloud was involved in this interaction. So within a business, all your data is secure, nothing occurred other than that little key exchange. This is important for the next few scenarios where I talk about collaboration, where, again, the data doesn't need to be seen by Microsoft in this particular case. Any questions on this? In this case, Secude is a DAC equivalent. You can think of Secude as DAC for SAP. So the DAC folks do classification on file servers, and Secude does that equivalent for SAP. The resulting files that are exported are an RMS-protected asset in the same way that a file coming out of a DAC protection experience would be protected. They're both natively protected Excel spreadsheets. Okay? Any other questions? No? Okay. So now this is where things get really interesting, and this is where, in my mind, the value proposition of what we're doing really starts to pay high multipliers of value. So sharing with anyone, this just works. This is something that to date has been nearly impossible to do, securely collaborating with another company. The first part of securing with anyone is really validating identities. So if I share with, let's say Anne or Micah here, Micah's here, so Micah at Synergy. So if I share with Micah at Synergy, I need him to prove who he is to me is effectively the challenge here because I want to do secure collab. We don't want to set ADFS relationships between us because generally speaking, you got to bring the lawyers. There's all kinds of issues. It takes a long time. Just a pain. And you don't want to do that clearly for 1,000 partners with who you choose to securely collaborate. So what I'd like to do is figure out a way to trust that Micra has possession of his identity. And I do that in a way that I feel confident with. So the way we do that is by using AD and Azure AD as our broker. So the RMS server will basically say, hey, Micah, you prove to your server that you are who you are. And when Micah proves that to the RMS server in the sky, he's basically logging into his AD, and the token goes up, and we get to broker between two companies. And so my company sends an email to Micah's company. Micah logs in, proves who he is. We didn't have to tell me anything. He just kind of went up to the cloud. And RMS says, okay, Micah, I'm happy with what you've proven in terms of your identity, and then can unlock the content that I've shared with him. So Azure AD is really key in this. There's a Channel 9 video. If you haven't watched it, I encourage you to go take a peek at it. It's interesting. But it's a little cartoon that sketches how AD and AAD tie together, and I think will be a very, very important part of all of your futures. If you use AD today, Azure AD will basically become an extension of that into the cloud. The second part is kind of tied into the whole RMS business offer. If I purchase RMS and I share with Micah, I expect Micah to be able to read that protected content. Now, today, Micah needs RMS, needs to set up what we call a trusted user domain relationship. It's a pretty involved process that, frankly, just doesn't happen anywhere near enough. In the new world, Micah just needs to set up a relationship with Azure, an Azure tenant, and doesn't need to buy anything. He just needs to set up a free relationship, and now he basically has a trust broker in the sky that anyone else can trust. So he did this one-time, single-pair relationship with Azure, and every other company in the world now can use RMS in this collaborative manner. So that's part one. Part two is if I send protected content to someone who wants to then interact with me and create other protected content and send it back, I'm going to give away RMS. I'm not going to show pictures of that today because it's still relatively new. But the idea is we've created this thing called RMS for individuals, and I can send an RMS protected message, like a PTEX that we showed earlier, or a PJPEG. I can send it to every one of you, and when you get the message, it'll basically say, Dan is sharing with you a sensitive file. Please sign in or sign up. And if you can sign in, great, you're good to go. Your company's all set up. If you can't sign in, then you just sign up. And the act of signing up will create a free account for you, In the same way that you can think of a Live ID account, but it'll be your corporate account. I will validate your email. So if you were Jane at Cisco.com will basically now have a tenant called Cisco. Jane will be asked to prove who she is to the system, and once she's proven who she is, then I will be able to share with Jane at Cisco.com. Better yet, Jane will be able to right-click on a text file and share back to me a protected file that she has control over. So when we're just giving that away, it's part of having RMS actually be useful in the scenarios that I initiate content. I'm a paying customer. So that's all going to come online in the July-ish time frame. July 15 through 30 is when we're going to launch this in beta. And then in the September time frame, this will be in full production. So the picture, the way I would build this up via slides would be Sally here is trying to share with Ellen. They want to share a document. They'd like to share a secure document. So RMS Online is involved. That RMS Online, as I just described, is going to work with two Azure Active Directories, my Azure Active Directory because I'm publishing, and then Ellen's Azure Active Directory because Ellen's trying to receive content from Sally and she needs to prove who she is. And now documents could be securely shared. We will create Ellen's account for free if Ellen doesn't have one. And in the case where Ellen and Sally are both in companies, they can basically set up a directory sync relationship with the cloud. So AD could basically say, I would like for my users and groups to be in my Azure AD, and that's a free offer as well. If there's some AD talk, Azure Active Directory talks that you might want to attend, and there's a directory sync talk that will be very interesting. It talks about that the little gray vertical line. But basically, at that point, you are now in control, and your AD and your Azure AD are connected, and this collaboration thing just works. If you're on Office 365, there's a whole lot more here as well. So this next one shows you what that experience is. So I didn't want to show the new user interface because it's not yet announced and we're looking at some branding changes. But at a high level, here's basically what happens. I go to... go ahead. Yeah, that little IP viewer that I mentioned that will be available on 6 platforms, it will be present. Yes?
Is there any intention of making this mechanism available on non-email platforms such as text messaging or Link?
So the question is, will we do this on text messaging or Link? Text messaging is hard because the transport is forced into an ASCII character set of limited length, so I wouldn't be able to do it there. Link is one that we've started conversations on internally. Not necessarily the real-time aspect, but when you're chatting, today, the chats are not secured in an RMS manner. Okay? Here's a simple chat-like flow, though. So I want to share with Micah. I basically grab a file on my desktop. I just right-click Share Protected. Up comes a new window. This new window says, hey, pick people. I type in email addresses. I use a picker. I can go pick Gmail users. I pick Live ID users. I pick work users, whatever. I just type in my users. I then grab a little slider. And I pick the role for each of the people I've added. And I can say, oh, these people will be editors, these people will be viewers, and that's it. And then I just say send. At that point, a mail message will come up, and it'll say what you kind of want to say. I suspect most people in this room have used LinkedIn once or twice. And when you do a LinkedIn friend invite, they kind of tell you, hey, I'd like to add you to my professional network. And most people don't change it and just hit send. Well, that last step is a bit of the same thing. Dan is sharing with you all. I'll use my New Orleans you all. So I don't know if we'll be that regional specific. But Dan is sharing with you a sensitive file, and he would like for you to access this file securely. Please sign in or sign up, and then you'll have all the information there. If you want to use it on your phone, here's the app to install. But you'll basically have everything needed there. The recipient will get this email. And when they see the email, it'll basically say what I just said, and it'll say sign in, sign up, and they can sign in, open the doc. If they've not, they sign up. The sign-up flow is three screens. And after the three screens, you're basically done. You get to open the dock. The three screens are very simple. Give us an email address. Then go look in your inbox. You will have a confirmation. I want to prove that you are in possession of your email address. Once I get proof of your possession, then I'll say I need a first name, a last name, a password, and I need a region, which part of the world that you're in. That's it. Once you've done that, an account is created for your company in Azure, and effectively over time, more and more people will end up in that tenant. And if you're an IT pro in the audience and you say, hey, you know, people in my company are starting to use this, you know, secure sharing thing, that's pretty cool, you can come and scoop up the tenant and everything will remain intact. Nothing is destroyed. Yeah.
How is this different
or critical? You know, it is similar to Exchange hosted email. The difference is that we're trying not to do the email thing. We're trying to do the doc thing, A. And B, the idea here is you can either protect or share protected, and you have that persistent protection in place. You don't have to go to a web portal to read it. So my emphasis is on protecting the asset. But we are working very closely with the Exchange team, and those two, I think, will come closer together. So implementing RMS, I'll go through a couple slides real quick here. This is where Tejas is going to excel. I'm giving you tons of detail. The first one is I think of organizations as being in one of these three states: cloud ready, accepting, or hesitant. And hesitant is not a mean or derogatory word in any way. It just means, look, you've got some concerns, and that's okay. We have solutions for all three. The purchase plan is pretty straightforward. You basically buy an Azure RMS standalone offer. If you're not an Office 365 user, it's a $2 SKU, and you purchase that. It gives you the right to use RMS on-prem, so you can run, you know, basically hybrid and in the cloud. And you only pay for publishing. Consumption is free, which is a change. And I want to be careful here because I have the consumption / non-owner use. If someone's using FCI or doing protection on behalf of a user, that is considered a publishing license. In other words, if you're using the Secude offer and you're protecting reports coming out of SAP, whoever's the owner of the file is considered a publisher. It's not the Secude one-seat license model. And the reason why we do that is because you're giving a lot of flexibility to the owner. I'll talk about this more on the next slide. Tejas is, again, another pitch for his talk. It's at 5 today. Yes?
Sorry. Are you saying that it's included in E3?
Yes. So I'll actually touch on that in a slide here in a quick sec. Generally, the way I divvy things up is as follows. I'll start from the blue side, the protection column. Basically, you can use ADRMS on-prem. If you're cloud hesitant, we think that the Azure ADRMS offer supports all organization types and does a really good job at the cloud hesitant scenario. If you're looking at storage and you're cloud hesitant, you're probably keeping a lot of your data on-prem, and that's okay. Windows FCI gives you a great way of protecting content. As you start moving to cloud drives, whether you like it or not, even cloud hesitant companies are Dropboxed or SkyDrived by their employees who put it on their devices. You have the ability to use RMS protection for that content as well. In the portal market, you have SharePoint on-prem and SharePoint Online. Here, the SharePoint Online is a more serious commitment. You clearly are in the cloud accepting camp if you're putting all your docs in the cloud in SharePoint, and the same thing with Exchange, where you have Exchange on-prem and you can use Exchange Online. Generally speaking, that cloud accepting organization ban is where companies are living with a foot in both camps. They might move all of their receptionists or support staff into mailboxes in the cloud, but they might keep certain engineering functions, R&D, et cetera, on-prem because they deal with more sensitive data. It's really your choice. But in all of these, regardless of how reluctant or cloud happy you are, you can use the cloud RMS without divulging any secret information and get the benefit of that business-to-business collab. The important part of the sharing aspect is if I wanted to share data with Micah, well, me and Micah's bad, if Anne from Sakude wanted to share data with Micah, that data didn't need to come into Microsoft's data center in order to be shared. Only the key dance to unlock the files occurred with Microsoft, but the data itself could have been, you know, put on a CD and FedExed if you wanted. So it's an important aspect of the model. In terms of timelines and businesses, Office 365 includes RMS. It's literally one button, and Tejas will walk through pressing that one button later this afternoon. But if you're 0365, you turn it on, it's trivial. And you can do that right now. It's in market, E3, E4. Post E3, E4, there will be an offer called the add-on RMS offer. So if you wanted to use E1 or P2 or whatever other SKU, you can buy RMS as well for those. And that's effectively the standalone SKU as an add-on in the 0365 taxonomy. If you want to use the SAP offer and not buy any Office 365, you can do that as well. You only pay for RMS once, so as you add other products, you get RMS in any other product you want. RMS is a SaaS service, so to speak. If you're cloud hesitant, there's this thing called the connector, which means that you can deploy bits on-premise, which will basically lie about RMS existing. So Exchange on-premise says, hey, is there an RMS server around? And our connector goes, yeah. But it talks to the cloud. If SharePoint's looking for an RMS server or FCI's looking for an RMS server, they can all use the connector to have a cloud interaction, which gives you that business-to-business collaboration and device support while still keeping all your infrastructure on-prem. So I think that's a really important part. And there's one little thing that I wanted to touch on before we close out here, which is the control of the key. A lot of the paranoia around moving to the cloud, the concern has to do with protection and key assets such as your tenant key. We use Talis HSMs in our device, and I have a slide that talks about that. But we basically have Talis HSMs in locked cages in our data center. You would not believe how crazy we are about this stuff. I was talking to Gartner recently, and their response to me was, Dan, you have so much more to lose than me losing data. Because if you have one customer problem, your business pretty much is in the tank. And we're treating it that way. We have these HSMs are in a split architecture, metal-based architecture, in cages, security guards, keys to the cages, quorum. I can speak for an hour and a half on just this topic alone. I can't get at your keys. The keys are set up in a way that they cannot be extracted from the Talis HSM, even if you have a full quorum of operators, because they were put in with a special bit on them. The next one is I'm going to give you near real-time logs because we have your key and we're caching it for you and we're using it, but the logs will tell you who's using it and when they're using it. And basically, you're just going to go to Azure, get blob storage. You're going to tell the RMS service to write to your blob storage, and we're just going to put data in there as we write. And you can do whatever you want. You can work with third parties to sit on these logs and do a lot of analysis, forensics. It's a great way of tracking who's using your data. For example, if an employee leaves the company, you can go back 6 months and look at what data they've accessed in that last 6 months to get a sense if they were planning this migration to your competitor. So there are a whole lot of interesting values that you can do with the logging. There's a ceremony that occurs in an air-gapped room to ensure security of your key. And finally, we're looking at this additional feature called key rejuvenation, which is sort of like certificate renewal. You push the key to me every 2 hours. It goes straight into the HSM. Nowhere else sees it. It can actually not be used outside the HSM because it has a transport key with a very short time to live. But basically, you're pushing keys into my HSM with the express understanding that they can only live for 4 hours. If you're suspicious for whatever reason, you read something in the news, there's some North Korea-like event, whatever occurs, you can just pull your cable, and 4 hours later, my service can't access any of your content, nor can anyone else. We basically brick everything at that time. So If you have paranoia about the cloud, talk to us. We care about this very, very deeply. We're spending a lot of time thinking about how we put you in control of your data in our world. An HSM, for those of you who don't know, is basically an explosive-wrapped crypto computer that's dipped in epoxy, and it's a whole Acme, Wile E. Coyote kind of thing, where if you try to get in the box, the crypto device can't do what it does. If you're concerned about someone leaking your work document, you should have bigger concerns. Tally's is used by 19 of the 20 largest banks, most of the ATMs and bank machines and air traffic control and reservations all use this. So it's not about you leaking a doc. It's about you not going broke or losing your life. It's all banking. It's all based on this. And if you're a gamer, all of the Xbox Live infrastructure also runs on these things too, and that's important. Okay. my lawyers advise me to be careful about what I say regarding legal matters. Okay. But from a technical perspective, there are different tiers of subpoenas. In the case, Microsoft's policy in the case of an open subpoena is we talk to our organizations and say, hey, we've been subpoenaed for your content. Oh, we don't have your content. Okay, never mind. So that's one case. We've been subpoenaed for your content. It's in SharePoint. In 7 days, we're going to give them your content. You can do whatever you want, given what I've described on the slide. But effectively, you've got a 7 days heads up that I'm going to be giving over some data that I had in my cloud. The third scenario is the sealed subpoena, which is a very rare subpoena. It's really the Patriot Act, terrorist kind of subpoena. And I have sort of two mixed views. The flippant view is a little bit of, if you're the subject of one of those subpoenas, you're a bad person. You know, something wrong is going on because they don't get used very often, and it's a very rare 100-year storm kind of event. The less flippant view is there's not a whole lot I can do, and Microsoft will comply with the law. To my knowledge, that's not occurred to date with any of our online services because it is such a black swan / 100-year storm type event. So most of the organizations that I talk to about this get it. It's a little bit like buying earthquake insurance. This is a really good offer until such a 100-year storm were to occur. Short of that, you got to keep your data on-premise. Okay? And then I think I had, I'm going to skip this one. And Tejas is going to go through this one later today. But really, in a nutshell, the easiest way to get protection is move to the cloud. If you're not ready to do that, the quickest way is the hybrid connector. Come July, you'll be able to get your hands on this and start playing with it. And it'll be in market in September. And you can actually start playing with ADRMS in the cloud using a tenant trial. And this bring your own key offer is a very, very powerful way of dealing with some of the concern you may have with moving to the cloud. That plus the fact that you can now securely collaborate with anyone that you want to securely collaborate with, we think is a big game changer. Okay, so I'm out of time. My little red light's blinking, but I'm happy to take questions here up front. Thank you very much for your time.